The closing market report is made possible in part by a grant from Paul Cooley of ADM Investor Services in Oakland, Illinois, a full-service commodities firm with two toll-free lines. In Illinois, 800-252-2013. In Indiana, 800-637-3123. Or email to cooley at admworld.com.
From the Land-Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report for March 21st, 2011. This is Dave Dickey. In a few moments, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Pete Manhard of Bates Commodities in Normal, Illinois. Also this half hour, we'll take a look at the cash grain market with the folks at the Andersons in Champaign, Illinois. In agricultural news, the AFL-CIO says it continues to oppose U.S. free trade deals with South Korea and Colombia. We'll have that and other stories. And Todd Gleason looks at the birthplace of no-till agriculture. It's all on the Monday edition of the Closing Market Report.
Agricultural programming is made possible by Farm Credit Services of Illinois. Farm Credit Services of Illinois has been providing for farmers' credit and insurance needs for over 90 years, including real estate, operating and machinery loans, crop and life insurance protection, and programs for young and beginning farmers.
Well, here's how futures settled this Monday afternoon in Kansas City and Chicago. On the Kansas City Board of Trade, nearby May wheat had a high all the way up to 862.5, the low 836.75, and the settlement price at 842. That was down 3 cents a bushel on the day. July also down 3 cents at 852.75 at the end of trading. May wheat in Chicago was down 2 cents, 7.21 the settlement, the high up to 7.41.75, the low price 7.17.25. July wheat settled at 7.57, down a penny and a half. September 7.97 at the close, down a quarter, and December ended the day at 8.26 a bushel, down 3/4. But March wheat for next year closed at 8.46.5, up a quarter cent. May corn settled for the day at 686.5. That was up 3 cents, the high up to 698.5 during trading on this Monday, 676, the low for the day. July corn settled up 3.5 cents at 693.5. September, 645.5, up 8.5 cents. Dease corn up 11 at the end of the day at 609.5. May soybeans, 1363, the settlement price for the nearby, up a half cent. July up a penny and a half at 1373, and August 1369.5, up 2.25 cents.
Support comes from Stuart Peterson, since 1985 offering strategic commodity consulting and marketing services to help producers manage market opportunities and risks. The firm develops strategies customized to each client's goals and operation size. More information is available at www.stuart-peterson.com.
Looking at meteorologist Drew Lerner's weather highlights, he says frequent waves of rain and some snow will move through the Midwest during the coming week to 10 days. Sufficient amounts of moisture are expected to resume flood conditions in some locations and prolong soggy soil conditions in other areas. Northern Midwest crop areas will be wettest this work week, while southern areas experience a little more net drying. The weather conditions will then shift to the south. Snow will be greatest during the Tuesday night into Thursday morning time period, when 4 to 10 inches will accumulate from North Dakota to northern Wisconsin and upper Michigan. Temperatures will continue mild to cool in the north and warm in the south through Wednesday. Highs in the north will cool from the 40s and 50s today to the 20s and 30s by midweek. Southern portions of the Midwest will see daily highs through Wednesday in the 60s and 70s.
Support for the Closing Market Report comes from AgriGold Hybrids, featuring the AgriGold Giants, a group of 5 new hybrids designed to meet the performance standards of yield, health, and consistency required by Midwestern corn growers. More information is at AgriGoldGiants.com or at 800-262-7333.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report. I'm Tom Rogers. Dave Dickey and I are tag-teaming today. Dave's a little under the weather. Joining us now for a look at the futures market on this Monday is Pete Manhart of Bates Commodities in Normal, Illinois. Good afternoon, Pete.
Good afternoon, Tom.
Well, it seemed to be a choppy day of trade today before it turned to the upside in the corn particularly and the beans as well. Do you think this type of trading is going to be continuing through the balance of the week?
I think it's going to be volatile. If we looked early, we opened higher and then went lower. And we actually came back to near highs on new crop late in the day. Overnight, we were down a lot and up a lot. And I think that will continue to be choppy based on whatever information comes out. We have the weather, which is worrying a lot of people. We have southern beans getting too much rain. We have the war in northern Africa or whatever you want to call it. And we also have weather in Eastern Europe and Russia. And then we have all the mess in Japan with the worries about all the fallout coming from those energy or areas. So depending on what's in the news latest or what's pulling which way when, I think we'll be back and forth as we were today.
Now, today Goldman Sachs released a report saying that farmers will plant about 75.6 million acres with soybeans today. That's well below the USDA estimate. Do you think the market might try to rally soy to encourage some more soy acres from farmers based on those early estimates?
Well, we could try that. We came back a long way last week from the lows we'd made, and we did stay up 11 on the new crop. Those acres were more than what Informa had last week,
right,
but they're still a million and a half short of what USDA is projecting. I think the weather will have a lot more to do with those acres than what USDA or anybody else says. If we stay wet, we won't get a corn acres planted as quickly, and we'll go more to beans. If we all of a sudden become dry and can plant, we'll have more corn acres and less beans. And I don't know right now whether price means a lot unless you haven't applied any anhydrous and you're looking at the straight price and what you have to put out to plant an acre of corn versus an acre of bean.
What are your expectations in advance of the quarterly grain stocks report? When does that come out, by the way?
I think it's the end of quarterly, I believe, is at the end of June.
Okay.
First quarter, second quarter, that'd be the end of second quarter. Grain stocks, there's people with all kinds of ideas of tightening supply or loosening supply based on demand. And with the Chinese maybe not buying quite as many beans, or the Japanese nearby not being able to maybe take as many, those stocks might go up a little in corn or beans. But long-term, it's thought that the Japanese will need to buy more because of the situation in their country, and the Chinese might need to buy more to put some back in storage that they've been selling. So, again, those quarterly stocks, depending on what the other news is, might push or pull.
Now, is there a good chance that some of the worldwide events in Japan or Libya might overshadow some of those report numbers that come out?
Last week, the down move was mostly over that. Right now, you've got basically the weather, which could be forcing things back or forth. You've got the news out of China and the news out of North Africa that could be taking over and pushing things. And those two things could well overtake anything that has to do with our carryout that's just an estimate from the government or someone else.
How might Argentinian exports weigh on the market? Today, I've got a story that the tax agency in Argentina broadened a crackdown on what they say are rampant tax evasion measures by some exporters, and they suspended three more companies in their inquiry. How is this going to work on the prospects for exports out of Argentina, you think?
Well, they export a lot of their crop. It was for three more companies. They'd already done this to three others or four others,
right,
because they think they're trying to avoid paying the export taxes, which in Argentina are huge. And that could cause Argentina not to export as much, except maybe exporting corn into Brazil. And as one of the leading exporters of things in the world, grain-wise, that could push more of the stuff back here to the U.S., but we are very tight supplied on what we have left for old crop corn and for beans, so that could help push prices higher if they actually don't let exports out of the country in some manner.
Now, with the market's ended up today, but do you expect the new longs, specifically the funds, to re-enter the market ahead of these reports that are coming up?
Some of them will, some of them won't. You got about four kinds of funds. Everybody last week during the meltdown of Japan was just get me out of everything, and they have since come back from that and are going back to a normal routine of are they a trend follower or are they just a get me in and stay long or are they whatever type of fund they are, a hedge fund. And while a hedge fund might do one thing, a different fund might do something else. But I think there's tons of money coming into funds that some of that will be put back into the grains because they're performing as well as anything.
Now, I mentioned the Goldman Sachs report that came out today about the lower than USDA estimates on soybean plantings this year. Corn came out a little pretty much on par with what USDA had to say. Any take on that?
I think those numbers are so well out there that anybody being a little off isn't going to make much difference. I think the weather forecasts of where we're going to be planting-wise will have more to do with people's idea of what we're going to get planted than what USDA or Goldman Sachs says about acreage.
What does this all boil down to for the producer? What should a farmer be thinking with some stocks that they may have?
It's going to produce volatile ups and downs and give the farmer, the producer, opportunity to make cash sales and or to protect high prices. And after they've sold, if we back up again, it gives them a chance, like last week, to buy calls, to get back in the market. We went up 95 cents before today on corn after dropping $1.30. Beans had dropped about $1.90, and we went back up 90 before today. So when we move down hard like that, it gives them opportunity to be back in the market with calls to participate in the up move. If they haven't sold yet, it gives them opportunity on the upside to make cash sales and or protect if they don't want to sell with puts.
Anything in the weather that's working on the market at all, or is that taking a pretty deep back seat?
No, the weather is out there. We're going to have more moisture in the Midwest. We're not doing much here. There's not much activity going on in lots of the southern areas where they would already be planting. And so I would say after Japan and the war in the Mideast or whatever you want to call what they're doing over there, weather is probably the next most important thing, depending on what the weather forecast says, more important than these acres that are talking about.
How much behind are we talking about in the southern areas?
Not much, but they just haven't started yet. So, you know, one day, 2 days, 3 days, whatever. You know, we can plant a ton in a week, but if it continues to stay wet until you get started, people will talk about, well, we're going to be late. And that's not true until we actually get to those places, but we haven't really started to do anything yet, which we normally would have done in the South.
Anything that you may want to add in the wheat market, which we didn't give a whole lot of attention to in this report?
Wheat market has slipped 270, 280, and it come back about a dollar. But as you get into harvest situation, which we will be in the southern plains soon, it's tough to make wheat go up unless the wheat's really poor yields and or poor quality, or that they're tearing it up to plant something else because it isn't very good. So wheat here is tight supplied. Wheat in the rest of the world is adequate.
All right. Anything else to add today?
Just that it's going to be very volatile. Be ready to jump on and trap an opportunity.
Fasten our seatbelts, I guess. Thanks a lot, Pete.
Thanks.
Pete Manhart is with Bates Commodities in Normal, Illinois.
In agricultural news, the AFL-CIO says it will continue to oppose the pending U.S. free trade agreements with South Korea and Colombia. AFL-CIO President Richard Trumka says while he appreciates the administration's efforts to address concerns about the auto provisions in the Korea-U.S. free trade agreement, the deal would put too many jobs at risk. Turning to the U.S.-Colombia free trade agreement, Trumka referred to what he called the foundational issue of human rights in trade agreements, noting how these deals integrate economies and societies. Trumka says, quote, trade agreements with countries that do not respect human rights make the United States a party to the abuse of those rights, and they turn U.S. workers into secondary targets. China's imports of many major commodities all but dried up in February as a national holiday abundant stockpiles and rising prices combined to discourage shipments. Two of the commodity imports that slowed fastest in February were iron ore and cooking coal, the raw materials used by China's vast army of steelmakers. Goldman Sachs today cut nitrogen-focused fertilizer heavyweight CF Industries to sell from neutral, citing peaking corn prices, but raised Potash Corporation by a notch to buy, saying potash-based companies' limited exposure to the crop makes them attractive. The brokerage said current corn prices of $6 to $7 per bushel is unsustainable as pressure on domestic feed demand, supply expansion, and policy response will ultimately converge to loosen the current balance. The World Health Organization today says that radiation in food after an earthquake damaged a Japanese nuclear plant is a serious situation, eclipsing the first clear signs of progress in a battle to avert a catastrophic meltdown in the reactors. The health ministry has urged some residents near the plant to stop drinking tap water after high levels of radioactive iodine were detected. The World Bank says the disaster will depress Japanese economic growth briefly before reconstruction kicks off and gives the economy a boost. China Premier Wen Jiabao today says he is optimistic about the outlook for the U.S., European, and world economies. Wen, speaking to a group of foreign company executives at a meeting in Beijing, also said he was surprised and shocked when he saw oil prices exceeding $100 a barrel this year. He said unrest in the Middle East and loose monetary policies in some countries caused the spike in energy prices. And that's a look at today's agricultural news. Many people believe Dixon Springs is beautiful American country. It's also the birthplace of the modern no-till era for agriculture. Todd Gleason has more from Southern Illinois.
It was here in deep southern Illinois, close to the Shawnee National Forest and the furthest north cypress swamp in the United States, that the modern era of farming was challenged and changed. The lands roll, and when it rains, wash away into the Ohio and Mississippi rivers by the ton. Or at least they did, until a University of Illinois agronomist decided there had to be a better way to grow crops on the hillsides. For 37 years, George McKibben experimented and evangelized what was to become the modern era of no-till farming. Illinois agronomist Steve Ebelhair explains the effects of the research can be seen throughout the southern Illinois landscape.
Oh, absolutely, because back in the 30s and 40s, when the area was still under conventional tillage system, we saw a lot of really gully erosion. A lot of water coming off the fields, just saturated with soil. Just dark soil moving off the profiles, off the landscapes. And now, when you see a rain, you know it's mostly clearer water, not a lot of soil movement because the residues are helping hold the soil in place. So we don't see the gullies that we once saw under conventional till system, where the water has moved tremendous amounts of soil off the profiles.
What really made George McKibben's no-till experiments at Dixon Springs work as a soil-saving tool is pretty simple. And there's a reason it took so long for farmers to adopt the practice, meaning reasons it wasn't thought of or worked on prior to the 1960s. The technology to control weeds hadn't been developed and adapted to the farm before that time. The herbicides, allowed McKibben's no-till experiments to work, says Ebelhair.
It's really the merger of good weed control herbicides coming into the market and the pioneering efforts of George McKibben that really made no-till take off in the early 60s into the 70s.
And then in the mid-1990s, when the herbicide-resistant varieties of soybeans were introduced, no-till really began to boom. The crop had been modified to withstand being sprayed with a herbicide, and no-till acres around the nation and in Illinois jumped. The first time no-till soybean acres outnumbered any other tillage method in the state of Illinois came in 2007, 41 years after George McKibben planted his first no-till experiment at Dixon Springs. For University of Illinois Extension, I'm Todd Gleason.
It's 2:26, and joining us now with cash grain analysis is Jenny Springer with the Andersons in Champaign. Good afternoon, Jenny.
Good afternoon.
Well, what we have here are the spot basis bids for corn, steady to firm generally at river terminals, ethanol plants, and processors, seeing slow farmer sales. What are you seeing?
I think we're starting to see a little bit more grain move off the farm. I don't know that basis is necessarily buying it, but just the board rallying back, trying to find, you know, its recent highs is getting some guys to move more. But I don't know that there's a whole lot of corn left out in the countryside for, you know, farmers to sell.
So pretty much people are wanting to take advantage of some of the higher prices in case of another sell-off?
Yeah, I think so. You know, when we sold out, I mean, we tested, I think we were down to around 615, mm-hmm. you know, on the March or May futures. And I think after guys saw that, now that we're nearing that $7 mark again on the futures, they're not afraid to get rid of some, especially ahead of the 31st acreage report.
How about the soybeans? Are we talking about the same situation with beans as we are with corn?
Beans-wise, I really don't think there's a whole lot left on the farm either. I mean, basis has been steady. It really hasn't gotten, you know, much better or much worse. But I think it's the same kind of situation as far as I don't really think there's a whole lot left on farm for guys to move as far as beans are concerned.
What's the weather picture looking like?
And, you know, I think that we were getting somewhat dry last week with the warm air that we had and, you know, some of the windiness that we saw. But they're, you know, forecasted rain here for the next couple of days, and it's a 50 to 60% chance. So, you know, don't see much happening here in the next couple of weeks, even though guys are going to start to get, you know, kind of antsy, especially after the spring we had last year.
And south and north, we're talking about the same situation?
Yeah.
How about any of the outside? I mean, we talked about the thought of what happens if we do have another sell-off because of situations around the world, like what's been happening in Japan.
Mm-hmm.
How big has, you know, news outside worked on the cash grain prices?
Well, I mean, I think today especially we fought to find some direction, you know, in the market. We traded both sides of the spectrum, but you know, last week we saw quite a bump. I mean, we saw a couple of, you know, we're expanded limits the one day, and you know, that was with the news that we had made some more sales to China, you know, so that helped recover our cash prices a little bit better. I mean, we didn't see a bump in basis, but we did see, you know, the rally back towards $7, you know, on the old corn.
And to wrap things up, what are your prices today?
Cash corn, we are $6.74. New corn, new fall corn, $5.77. Cash beans, $13.44. Fall beans, $13.10, and July wheat, $7.07.
And anything else to add today?
Nope, that'll be all.
All right, thanks a lot, Jenny.
Thanks.
Jenny Springer is with the Andersons in Champaign. In a couple of minutes, I'll be back with a look at agricultural weather.
It's National French Bread Day. It's also California Strawberry Day. On this day in agricultural history in 1869, Albert Kahn was born, a German-American industrial architect. He is considered by many as the father of modern factory design. He was responsible for the design of Detroit's first large auto plants for the Packard Motor Car Company. Kahn also designed Ford Motor's famous Highland Park plant, where the Model T was produced. In 1915, Frederick Taylor died, an American inventor and engineer. He is known as the father of scientific management. He introduced a scientific approach to time and motion studies. In 1994, due to bad harvests, there was a shortage of Japanese-grown rice. Japan's imperial palace began serving royal meals to the emperor and empress with rice grown in the U.S., China, and Thailand. And in 1999, Bertrand Piccard and Brian Jones landed in the Egyptian desert, having completed the first around-the-world hot air balloon flight. According to the BBC, they carried fresh food, including bread, cheese, and pre-cooked steaks, to last for 6 or 7 days, after which they made do with dried foods such as cereals and powdered milk. The flight began in the Swiss Alps and took 19 days, 21 hours, and 55 minutes. And that's This Day in Agricultural History.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report. I'm Tom Rogers, along with Dave Dickey. Joining us for our look at the agricultural weather on this Monday is Josh Darr of Chesapeake Energy in Chicago. Good afternoon, Josh.
Good afternoon.
Well, we've got we've talked to a couple of analysts who both mentioned some antsy farmers who want to get out and do some spring planting, but we're still looking a little wet over much of the growing area.
We are, and certainly the pattern over the next 10 days continues to feature a parade of storm systems moving across central portions of the Midwest, and so any folks wanting to get out on the field, it's going to be rather tough going. The next storm system it's a warm front that comes through the belt tonight and tomorrow, and that follows up by a storm system moving straight across the Midwest on Wednesday. That'll bring to an end some of the warmer temperatures we've seen across the central and southern Midwest today, a gorgeous day across much of the area. By Thursday and Friday, we go into a below-normal temperature regime. Temperatures across central Illinois, for example, just to pick out a point, will be generally in the low 40s for highs through the weekend and lows in and around freezing. Even some flurries in the air at times across central portions of the Midwest. Next week, we get into a colder than normal pattern. It does look like we clear out a bit. So cold, but clear, maybe allowing some field work preparation to take place.
Now, we're actually seeing some significant snowfall in the forecast for the northern plains and the northern Great Lakes.
Yeah, that's right. The next 48 to 72 hours, we have a pretty impressive storm system. It's the warm front coming through the Midwest is resulting in snows across the Dakotas into northern portions of Minnesota with 6 to 12 inches, some isolated heavier totals up across that area. And we're just talking here in the office about the impressive amount of liquid still in the snowpack across North Dakota, the Red River Valley. We'll be adding heavy wet snow on top. And so the thoughts of the perennial floods, it seems, this time of year will likely occur again here in later in April when you start to melt down that really liquid, dense snowpack that's in place across the northern plains.
Now, is there going to be some improvement coming up for the southern plains? Is it going to stay warm down there?
Yeah, warmth it still looks to be main in the forecast as a rule across the southern plains. No rain still in the forecast for the drier areas, the hard red winter wheat belt, western Kansas, Oklahoma, Texas. And so at least for the next 7 to 8 days, you stay warmer. The question we're starting to see is out longer into early April, we see a pattern starting to evolve that may allow for some colder conditions into portions of the central and southern U.S. with the amount of crop that is advancing, particularly jointing and maybe even some heading wheat down in the southern plains in early April. I have to watch that situation. Can't say anything specific right now, but it's a time of year when you need to watch colder temperatures across that area of the country.
Well, we're looking here for wet weather for a while, huh?
Yeah, that's right, Tom. It will stay in that wet pattern here the next week and continue to add to already a very good topsoil moisture base.
Any quick notes you can add about Argentina and Brazil?
Delays continue to be seen across Brazil, continues to be more active than normal pattern. Argentina, some rain in the forecast, which should be good for double crop.
All right. Thanks for your time.
All right. Thank you.
That is Josh Darr of Chesapeake Energy in Chicago, Illinois. That wraps up today's Closing Market Report. Remember, you can subscribe to our free Ag e-newsletter before the end of the key end of month reports, and you can do that at our website, willag.org. Use the link in the right navigation window. Along with Dave Dickey, this is Tom Rogers.